Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet Plush Care, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Coming up on DTNS, a project to make smart home gear interoperable, security certification for VPNs, and Apple Music pays more than Spotify. This is the Daily Tech News for Friday, April 16th, 2021 in Los Angeles. I'm Tom Merritt.
And from Studio Redwood, I'm Sarah Lane.
Also from Los Angeles, I'm Lamar Wilson.
Drawing the top tech stories from Cleveland, I'm Len Peralta.
And I'm the show's producer, Roger Jane.
We were just talking about who among us has and has not had their picture taken with a chimp. If you want to find out, get our expanded show, Good Day Internet. Become a member at patreon.com/DTNS. Let's start with a few tech things you should know.
Microsoft introduced a kids mode for its Edge browser with two modes for kids aged 5 to 8 and 9 to 12. Kids mode features a unique home screen with news stories from kid-friendly publications and includes a built-in list of approved sites that parents can customize.
So it's a blunted edge. Okay. Bitcoin was down more than 4% on Friday after Turkey's central bank banned cryptocurrency and crypto asset purchases for goods and services due to possible irreparable damage and transaction risks. Ethereum and XRP, which tend to follow Bitcoin prices trends, fell between 6 to 12%. Turkey's main opposition party criticized the ban.
Google added a new shortcut to the desktop version of Google.com, so pressing the slash or forward slash will now jump to the search box when viewing results. This is seemingly designed to speed refining an original search query.
The Google Project Zero security team updated its vulnerability disclosure policies. They've added an additional 30 days after a patch is issued to bug disclosures. That's meant to give end users additional time to secure their systems, including for zero-day exploits. Previously, Project Zero published details after a bug after 90 days or when a patch was released, whichever came first.
A team of researchers from QTech in the Netherlands published an article in Science describing a proof-of-principle demonstration of key quantum network protocols, successfully creating the first multi-node quantum network using three quantum processors. Direct physical links have previously been established between two quantum processors, but this is the first to connect two quantum processors through an intermediate node and establishing shared entanglement between multiple standalone quantum processors.
Man, the Dutch, good at quantum stuff? And we'll find out later, vertical farming.
And cheese.
All right, let's talk a little more about music, royalties.
In a letter to artists sent through the Apple Music dashboard, Apple claims to pay music rights holders 1 cent per stream. That's compared to Spotify's recently disclosed rates of between 1/3 and 1/2 of 1 cent per stream. So, you know, 1 cent per stream all of a sudden looks pretty good. Apple also said 52 cents of every dollar of revenue goes to labels, while Spotify claims 50 to 53 cents. The Wall Street Journal points out, though, that Spotify pays less per stream because its customers listen to more music per month than customers on other services. Spotify also has free ad-supported tiers that generate less revenue than the paid subscription tier. Apple also said in its letter that, quote, creators should never have to pay for featuring, end quote, music in prime display space.
Yeah, I thought this was interesting, partly because a penny sounds like a lot more than I would have guessed, even if it is getting split up between the labels and the musicians. And the musicians obviously always get a little bit less. Labels keep a lot of that. That per stream, again, think about the, millions of streams that happen.
Amounts of stream.
That's a decent amount of money. sloshing around there.
It's more money than I make on YouTube. I need to make an album. You know, let's do it.
Like, yeah, become a successful recording artist, Lamar, and you're good to go.
I am ready. I'm ready now.
It's not that hard. People do it all the time. I was also fascinated about this idea that Spotify ends up paying artists less because their listeners stream more music. That is an aspect of this system that I think needs addressing, which is if your listener is a bigger fan of music, they're going to benefit the musicians less. And if you're like, wait, why is that? Remember, you're paying $10 a month for the service, right? So if you listen to 10 streams that month, then your $10 is split up $1 per stream. But if you listen to 100 streams, then it's only a cent per stream. And if you listen to 1,000 streams, it's even less. So imagine that same calculation spread out across the entire audience of Spotify. And the fact that Spotify listeners just tend to listen to more songs in a month than Apple Music means artists make less money per stream.
Because Spotify punished, isn't going to say, oh, Tom Merritt, you know, he's our best customer. He's never not listening to Spotify. We just won't take our cut to give the artist more. It's like Spotify is going to take their cut no matter how much you're using a service, and Apple Music too. I mean, that's why they exist.
And you're only paying the same amount every month, no matter how much you stream. So, you know,
exactly.
That's it.
Yeah. Gosh, can you imagine a music streaming service data caps?
Oh, that's interesting.
Oh.
Yeah, don't think about this too much, Spotify. Just back off.
Right. Yeah, forget I said it.
Yeah, no kidding. Because, I mean, man, if Comcast and Spectrum ran music services, you'd
have them.
Yeah. How that would work. There's got to be a better way to do that. I mean, I guess the idea is that even if you're getting less per stream, at that point, you're benefiting musicians better overall by streaming more music because you're divvying up the pie among more people. And the way you make more money is reaching more people in that case, not kind of trying to control how they stream.
Yeah.
Well, yes, don't listen to us, music industry. Keep things the way they are, but maybe give a higher percentage to the musicians. Labels could give a little higher percentage to the musicians too. In Android, when you select no in the location history setting, that means the operating system no longer logs your location. But it does not mean that websites and apps might not get that data unless you turn off the web and app activity setting. The location setting, which is in a very easy to find area of settings called location, you know, you tap into settings, location, you're there, says it may use sources like GPS, Wi-Fi, mobile networks, and sensors to estimate your device's location. Google may collect location data periodically and use this data in an anonymous way to improve location accuracy and location-based services. So far, so good. Easy to find setting, clear what it does. The web and app activity setting, however, is buried deep in the Google account settings. It says it saves your activity on Google sites and apps, including associated info like location, to give you faster searches, better recommendations, and more personalized experiences in Maps, Search, and other Google services. What this means is when you turn off location in that easy-to-find setting, your Google search app or going to google.com may still keep some location info on you unless you turn off the web and app activity setting deep in your Google account settings. Now, to many users, including me, that actually seems logical. Like, I don't like that it's buried so far, but I get it. Turning off an OS setting doesn't block an app or a website from accessing things like your IP address, right? They're doing it for different reasons. But the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission decided that even if it confused just some users, it is a violation of consumer law. So the commission sued, and the judge agreed. Friday, Federal Court of Australia Justice Thomas Thawley ruled that Google partially misled Australian consumers. Justice Thawley ruled that while the practice would not mislead all reasonable users, it was likely to mislead some reasonable users, since there was no reference to location info in the web and activity setting at the time that the lawsuit was taking place. Google is considering an appeal of this. Peter Lewis from the Australia Institute think tank told The Guardian, quote, "The problem here is you need a university education, and it takes an average of 74 minutes to read most terms and conditions." I found that quote particularly apt here, which is like, it actually took me like 20 minutes this afternoon to go find that web and app activity setting and understand exactly how it differed from the other location setting.
Wow. So what does the lawsuit make Google do? Are they compelled to make it easier to find? Are they fined?
They have to either explain what's happening and say this doesn't turn off all location. There's also these other places, or they have to make it turn off all location. But they have to mend their ways. And yeah, I'm not sure if that there's a fine involved as well.
I mean, I think that the main issue is that the web and activity is buried to the point where it does seem like Google's trying to not let people find this because you really have to go looking for it. Whether or not that's true, I mean, it just kind of depends on how you are with settings panels, you know, in a variety of places. And I think most of the people listening to DTNS would say, well, I know the difference between the two of these. This seems like, you know, I mean, who's really getting all that confused? We all know plenty of people who would, so who say, well, hold on a second. At the OS level, if I turn the setting off, how does that not affect everything on this device that I am then using from that point forward? And, you know, that's something that is, it's good to remember that there are a lot of people that this would confuse. You know, I think Google can probably just make some settings changes, add a few words here and there, and everybody's happier. But yeah, it's a good reminder.
Yeah, I'm not sure they're malicious here. I just think Google thinks like engineers. They always have an Android, and they always have their things. It makes sense for tech heads and for engineers, but it doesn't make sense for consumers.
Right.
And I think that's the bottom line.
No, I think you're absolutely right, because an engineer is going to say like, well, I'm not going to turn off location settings for the browser in the operating system area. That doesn't make any sense. What if you're logged into the browser on another device? Like I'm going to have to be able to tell when you're on this device versus that device. It's way too complicated. But yeah, I totally get. And I know people who are like, yeah, but it says location. So when I turn it off, it should turn off all the location, right?
Exactly. Yeah, like it's your master setting, right?
Right.
And in many ways, it is for some things. It's but yeah,
different the browser ways of conceiving is, of it. Yeah.
Exactly.
Amazon is rolling out the ability to set a Kindle's lock screen wallpaper to show the cover of the book, magazine, comic, or manga. currently being read. The display cover setting is coming to non-ad-supported standard Kindles as well as Paperwhite, Oasis, and Voyage devices. You can turn it on by enabling the show cover option under device settings, device options in settings. You could previously do this if you jailbroke your Kindle. Now, Tom and Sarah, when I first saw this, I was like, why is this a story? But then I realized, well, I'm not a Kindle user. So that right there. But even in my head, I was like, is this really a thing that people are asking for? And I think, Tom, you had a very, very quick answer to me.
Yeah.
when I said that.
The answer is, yeah, they do. I don't know. I don't really use a single-purpose Kindle device anymore, so this isn't going to help me. But I don't know how many times I've forgotten the name of the book I'm reading because I never see the cover of it. Usually, you know, as soon as you put a book down, you see the cover and you're reminded of the name and the author right away. That doesn't happen when you're doing an ebook. But now it can. And it makes perfect sense to me. Like, why are you showing me a picture of Ernest Hemingway when I turn off my Kindle? Show me the book I'm reading right then. I like the idea that you can leave this off if you don't want people to know. If you're like, I want to keep what I'm reading secret because maybe I'm a little embarrassed or whatever. But I think there are a lot of people that are like, I want to see that because there's that cue when I pick it up of like, oh, I am reading this book now.
Wait, so real quick, is when your Kindle is sitting idle, because I haven't used one in years, is it always showing the cover or is it blank?
It shows other things. It doesn't ever show the cover.
Before. So, but it was showing something. It wasn't just a blank.
It would show.
Screen.
It would show. Original Kindle showed like pictures of all great authors, right?
Okay. Now this makes sense a little bit more to me, because then you say, oh yeah, that's the book or whatever, because you can see it. Because I'm thinking if you pick it up and turn it on, it's just going to go back to where you left off. But I see the point now.
This is when it's when it's resting, because it's got the e-ink screen. It can just leave a picture up there and it doesn't use any battery life.
Got it.
I've never owned a Kindle, not for any good reason. I just never had one. I guess it's sort of, then the iPad came out and I was like, oh, I could just read stuff on the iPad. So I never actually, had the kind of standalone reading device that was the Kindle. I was shocked to learn that this wasn't already a feature. It seems really obvious that people would want this. I know for myself, I don't buy a whole lot of Dead Tree books anymore, but and the book is, you know, don't judge it by its cover, ha ha, but a great cover is something that is, you know, intrinsically connected to the book. You know, you always remember that cover of a book that you've been reading and you pick up and you put down a bunch of times and you do your little notch in your page to know where you are, and you look at the cover a lot. So to have that same experience with the Kindle and not have to, you know, keep buying lots of bookshelves for your books makes perfect sense to me.
Now you can judge your Kindle by the cover that shows up.
There you go.
And DSpace 9 wanted to point out, Lamar mentioned that this is for non-ad supported Kindles. If you've got a Kindle that is ad supported, ads show up when you turn it off. You can call Amazon and pay to have the ads turned off and get this feature. Some people say if you beg, sometimes they'll turn off the ad feature even without you paying, but your mileage may vary.
Oh.
We're doing a crossover show this weekend, folks. Very excited. This Week in Science and Daily Tech News Show meshing together. This Daily Week Tech in News Science Show. It's happening Saturday, April 17th at 7 p.m. Pacific, or 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. It's me, Sarah, and Roger, along with Dr. Kiki, Blair, and Justin from TWiS. And we have been soliciting topics from you. Thank you for those. We will be attending to those topics and talking about a bunch of them on the show. Again, this Saturday, April 17th, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. Watch live at dailytechnewsshow.com/live.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move.
By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter.
Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice.
Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
The Project Connected Home over IP program, or more easily remembered as CHIP, is supported by Apple, Amazon, Google, and a total of 180 companies providing a unified standard for smart home products. The idea is that you don't have to check if your product is going to use Zigbee or Z-Wave or worry if it works with your Echo or your Home or your HomePod. Everything in the CHIP Alliance works with everything else in the CHIP Alliance. The CHIP standard supports Bluetooth LE for setup, Ethernet, and Wi-Fi for high bandwidth stuff like your security cameras, and Thread the mesh protocol for low bandwidth stuff, you know, motion sensors, water sensors, stuff like that. Apple HomePod Mini, Google Nest Hub, and Eero all support Thread already, and older products can become chip compliant through a bridge, either with a firmware upgrade, or in some cases, you might have to buy a new bridge. But what you really want is brand new stuff that's chip compliant out of the box, and we're headed towards that world finally. According to a Zigbee Alliance webinar, members of Chip will be able to get their devices certified for the chip standard by the end of this year. That means by the holidays, you may be able to buy chip-compliant lighting, blinds, HVAC controls, you know, heating and air conditioning, TVs, door locks, garage door openers, security systems, Wi-Fi routers, and more. Keep in mind, Chip does not handle device-to-cloud communication, so you will still need a device's apps for some integrations. Chip certification, we got some more details in this webinar as well, requires AES 128-bit encryption, so devices in the Chip Alliance will be more secure. Over-the-air updates are required, so you won't have to go plug something in. It makes it easier to update it. And they're going to run a blockchain to certify device identity and track security updates. Stacey Higginbotham noted that the standard still needs to clear up how apps will work, since phones aren't likely to be chip certified because they leave your home. Also of interest is how homes with multiple smart assistants might work. So there's still some details to come, but this is a very promising move towards interoperability.
Yeah, I saw this. I was like, yes, finally. I just had an experience where I had to change a couple of light switches that I need for like automation for sunrise for some lights to come on. And, you know, it was a pain in the butt because I wanted to connect it to my security system. And so, okay, so that's Z-Wave. But oh, no, it's Z-Wave Plus. And then I have an iPhone. And then I have a HomePod. But it doesn't work with the HomePod, so I need to get an Amazon Echo because that connects to it. But I don't use it. It was driving me crazy. And I know I'm not the only one who's dealt with this. So seeing something like this, a standard, not going to be immediate. That's going to come. But eventually, where you just buy something and it just works.
And you just know it's going to work. Yeah, I was setting up a new LifeX bulb the other day, and it kept wanting to put itself on the HomeKit. And I'm like, yeah, but I'm using Echo for this stuff. And I really would like it just all to work together, so it didn't matter, right? Like, yeah, just set up and show up on all the devices I have, no matter what.
I've kind of got the opposite problem of you, Lamar, where everything that I can think of that's smart is a Zigbee compatible product, but that also influences my buying choices. Cause I'm like, I don't want to get weird here. Let's just make sure it's Zigbee. And that's, you know, that's how I know I don't break my house. And so this will be able to open up a lot of other product ideas to me that I just have never even paid attention to before, because it's like, yeah, you got to have it all in one system where it gets really weird. Cause it kind of gets weird anyway. So yeah.
I know we had like what Samsung has tried to do the smart things, right, to try, you know, Waymo, you know, there's been some ones to try to, and that still gets overly confusing. And so here's to hoping this becomes a thing quickly.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that they have everybody on board is the biggest advantage this has over previous efforts. Mm-hmm. They still need to work out some of the details on it. But to me, that's a better place than we've ever been regarding that stuff.
Exactly.
But speaking of security and Internet of Things, we got another story here.
We do. The Internet of Secure Things Alliance, or IOXT, has expanded its certifications for IoT devices to include mobile apps and VPNs. Criteria for certification was developed by security labs and testing vendors like NCC Group and Now Secure, as well as Google and Amazon. Now, to get certification, a mobile app has to have secure interfaces, automatic updates, secure password management, security by default vulnerability reporting programs, end-of-life policies, and more. Now, VPNs, let's try that, must pass these tests and also test for data leakage, automatic reconnects and kill switch functions, and checks for TLS intercepts and script injections. My tongue is acting up today. Sorry. The first apps certified under the new program are Ferrell's Hubspace from the Home Depot, Leviton GreenMax DRC, and Comcast Xfinity Authenticator. Now, the first certified VPNs are Google One, ExpressVPN, NordVPN, McAfee Innovations, OpenVPN for Android, Private Internet Access VPN, and VPN Private. I feel like I've done brand deals for like half of those VPNs.
Yeah. Yeah. You and a bunch of the rest of the internet. I use ExpressVPN myself, and I've had an open VPN through Private Tunnel for a long time. So I was happy to see both of those on there. Obviously, a lot of people are using Google One and Nord and McAfee. I'm not as familiar with Private Internet Access or VPN Private, but I'm sure we're going to get more added to that list as well as it goes along. This is another good standards organization expanding what it does to say, like, sure, good to certify the devices. We also shouldn't leave out the apps. I think that's incredibly important to say, like, oh yeah, if you got this Home Depot app, like, Home Depot, did they just like get some off the shelf stuff? Is it janky? Who's running it? It's like, no, okay, good. I know that a Pharos Hub Space is certified by the IOXT. That gives me a little more confidence. Good stuff.
Yeah. I was having a conversation yesterday with a friend about VPNs, ironically, and we had this story, and there was some hesitation because he's trying to be, you know, more private, and I was saying, well, yeah, you know, does a VPN block your ISP, you know, for ISP from seeing stuff, and we're kind of discussing that, but then it just came up that, hey, how do we know these VPNs are safe? I mean, how do we know they're not, you know, doing certain things with your data? So it's nice to see there are some, you know, it's not perfect, right? You know, you still don't fully know, but it's just good to know there's some certification in place because VPNs are becoming more commonplace. People are hearing about, I just mentioned, you know, people do ads on them, you know, so people are hearing about these things. And I guess it's important to have some baseline certification on these so people can feel that they're safe in some way.
Yeah, there's been some good projects out there to try to review VPNs and audit them. There's a VPN audit program out there that's really good. Even outlets like PC World, PC Mag do good reviews of this. So you know, adding another certification, kind of an independent certification to the pile is definitely helpful. And this seems like a very thorough one as well. I obviously want to make sure that they get audited, but the ones that got certified off the top give me a good indication of like, oh yes, I have seen those also audited by others and pass muster. Mm-hmm. So they've got the right names in there, at least at the beginning.
Yep. Well, who likes sneakers here?
Who doesn't, right?
Me.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, good. That's a good answer. Because Adidas announced the Stan Smith Milo concept sneaker, that's M-Y-L-O, Milo, which uses renewable materials across most of the shoe, including an upper section made from Milo material, which comes from root-like structure of mushrooms grown in a vertical farm in, you guessed it, the Netherlands. Adidas worked with the startup Bolt Threads on the material and hopes to have a version of the shoe for sale within the next 12 months. Milo isn't the only plant-based leather, though. MycoWorks uses mushrooms to create reishis, that's a kind of mushroom, used in a concept bag from Hermes, and Fossil is selling totes made from cactus leather.
Yeah, this Engadget story is fascinating because it just went into all the technology that is needed to replace animal leather, right? Leather made from animal skins, and make it quality, make it fit, make it work as a material, not have it be inferior. And there's a lot that goes into it, but a lot of people motivated to do it.
When I first read the story, I misread it, and I was like, Adidas is like going to sell the first mushroom shoe. It's actually, this technology does exist. Other companies, smaller companies, I mean, not Adidas size companies, you know, one of the biggest shoemakers in the world, have experimented with this. It's a material that I think is growing in sort of sustainability popularity. And yeah, I'm into it. I'm totally into it. Listen, I like leather. I like the look of leather. I like a leather shoe. If it's made of mushrooms, okay, I'm in.
I think, like you said in pre-show, like just mushrooms and feet, though, when I think of those two things.
You have to get past that part. Yeah,
you have to get past that.
Yeah,
I think I'll be okay.
You have to read through all of this about how they tan, you know, and compress and change the mushroom, because the idea of just wearing straight mushrooms on your feet, probably not as appealing.
Yeah. A lot of things happened but you know,
yeah,
from the cremini mushroom to the shoe
right.
from Stan Smith that you're, you know,
you're not just slapping a portabella on your ankle.
Because I like the baby bella ones myself personally.
Yeah.
I
think they go between your toes quite nicely. Well,
you know, the shiitake shoes, very pricey.
By the way, Adidas will not be the first to bring a Milo product to market. As Sarah said, they'll be the biggest, but Stella McCartney getting that first product out there. So there you go.
Okay.
Well, Stella McCartney has a partnership with Adidas.
Yeah. McCartney's fashion house will be the first to bring a name, followed by Adidas. Then Lululemon is going to put out some stuff. And then
mushroom at the SoulCycle.
Lemon, mushroom. I mean, could they go together? Nice vinaigrette.
No. Right. No, come on.
They can. You can make it work.
Apparently, Kering, a holding company that owns Gucci and Saint Laurent and all those kind of fancy brands like that, is going to do this too. So we're not seeing any of this stuff yet. Like Sarah said,
I think they say Keurig,
but yeah, no, for your mushroom coffee, that's a little farther down the road. All right, let's check out the mailbag.
David from sunny and not yet hot Phoenix wrote in and said, your discussion about time protection really hit me. David is referencing the conversation that we had yesterday about laws that could be put into place so that employers couldn't bug employees after the employees were kind of done with work for the day. David says, I was a brand new system admin for a large company back in 2004. I worked from home for many years. I had a realization a year or two in that neither my boss nor my company was going to protect my time. So I had to do it. I started really setting up those boundaries for work and personal and family time. Even if laws are passed, and even if a company means well, you still have to take control of your time. No amount of laws will make you control your time better. It is up to you. David says, I understand the pressure that people feel, but your mental and physical health is at stake if you don't do it, and no amount of money can buy your time back.
A big amen from me on this one. I didn't get a chance to hear that yesterday, but I worked for like 15 years working for myself, and the time respect does not exist unless you control it yourself. So, amen to David on this one.
Agreed.
Well, yeah. I know. It's like, yeah, we all shouldn't work ourselves to death. Seems so easy, right? In theory. If you have feedback, anything that we've talked about on our show, something that we might talk about on a future show, question, comments, all that good stuff, feedback at dailytechnewsshow.com is where to direct it to us. We read each and every email we get. So thank you in advance and keep them coming. Also, shout out to patrons at our master and grandmaster levels. Today, they include Jeffrey Zilks, Steve Iadarola, and Michelle Sergiu. Also, thanks to our brand new boss, Benjamin Yeager. Yay, Benjamin, who just started backing us on Patreon. Welcome, and thank you very much, new boss.
Well, Len Peralta has been busy drawing today based on at least one of the stories in our lineup. Len, what have you drawn for us today?
You know, I know Sarah said that Adidas isn't the first place to do these shoes, but I'm going to say, yeah, it's pretty cool. I have a name for them. I'd like to call them the mush shoes, you know, because I think that's like the new brand thing, right? And I got to say, one person in the mushroom kingdom has got to be very happy that there are mushroom shoes out there. It's the mushroom dude from Super Mario who I drew for this thing. Very cool. It's fun. This is available right now at my Patreon at patreon.com/Len. Also at my online store at lenperaltastore.com. And it's also available at OpenSea.io as an NFT. And you can get the sketches of all this stuff as unlockables if you get them there. So check it all out. I'm going out to get my mush shoes now. So
yeah, complete the whole look.
I love that you have to call him Mushroom Dude for protection purposes. we'll leave it at that. You know,
it's the mushroom dude.
The mushroom dude.
You know who I mean.
Yeah.
When I say Lamar Wilson, you also know what we mean. Lamar Wilson, thank you for being with us this fine Friday. Ah, TGIF indeed. Let folks know what you've been up to lately.
I've been kind of on a hiatus, but I'm working on a project with a streaming service. Hopefully be out next week, and I'll be showing some classic or some evergreen shows that I love watching or movies. So if you want to check that, you know, that out, I'm on YouTube, youtube.com/Lamar Wilson. That should be out sometime next week.
Excellent. Well, it's been a lovely week here on DTNS, and a reminder that we're live Monday through Friday, all the days, 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 20:30 UTC. Find out more, tell a friend, dailytechnewsshow.com/live. We're also back Monday, and we'll be joined by Tim Stevens. We'll probably be talking about cars. Talk to you then.
This week's episodes of Daily Tech News Show was created by the following people: host, producer, and writer Tom Merritt, host, producer, and writer Sarah Lane, executive producer and booker Roger Chang, producer, writer, and host Rich Strofolino, video producer and Twitch producer Joe Kuntz, associate producer Anthony Limos, Spanish language host, writer, and producer Dan Campos, news host, writer, and producer Jen Cutter, social media producer Shannon Morse, our mods, Beatmaster, W. Scottis 1, Zoe Brings Bacon, BioCow, Captain Kipper, and Jack Shid, mod and video hosting by Dan Christensen, video feed from Sean Way, music provided by Martin Bell and Dan Luters, Acast ad support from Trace Gaynor, Patreon support from Stefan Brown. Contributors for this week's show include Scott Johnson, Justin Robert Young, and Lamar Wilson. Guests on this week's show included Seth Rosenblatt and Ayaz Akhtar. Live art performed by Len Peralta. And thanks to all the patrons who make the show possible.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. From a local business to a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America NA, copyright 2024.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.